relations of cosmological correlation functions, which are relations that constrain the squeeze limit. So this is work with Lam Hui and Justin Khoury, which is in this paper here. And it's based on work by many other people, which I'll try to mention as I go along. So the context is just standard inflation, so a period of accelerated expansion that occurs before what we think of as the Big Bang, which addresses the standard cosmological problems and addresses the observed nearly scale invariant, nearly Gaussian perturbations that we see in the CMB as due to quantum fluctuations of whatever fields are active during this primordial time. So I'm going to be concerned only with standard single field inflation. So the usual case where inflation is driven by a scalar field. So in the usual case, it's just a standard kinetic term and a potential. And then we have the usual slow roll solution. And then the fluctuations around the solution are what we see as responsible for the CMB spectrum. So this system has three physical degrees of freedom, the scalar, and then two gravitons. So there's going to be three physical fluctuations, one scalar mode, zeta, and two in a transverse traceless spatial tensor, which will be the graviton. So we're interested in these inflationary correlation functions, which are just equal time quantum correlation functions of various products of these gammas and zetas, and evaluated at late times. So some notation, when we have a prime there, there's an overall momentum conserving delta function. The prime denotes the correlator with that removed. And then little c means the connected correlation function. So the power spectrum is just the non-delta function part of the Fourier transform of the two-point function for both the scalars and the graviton. So let me first review how these correlation functions are computed, because we'll see here we want to interpret these soft limits, these consistency relations, as due to a symmetry. So we'll want to see what the symmetry is in from the point of view of the action. So the starting point is just the action of the scalar field coupled to GR. So I've written here a standard kinetic term, but I won't need this assumption going on. So we go to ADM variables, a 3 plus 1 split into a lapse and a shift and a spatial metric. And when we write the action in terms of these variables, we find that there's no kinetic terms on the lapse and the shift. So these are auxiliary variables. They can be integrated out using their own equations of motion. And once you do that, what's left will be a non-local action for just the physical zeta and gamma, which is still gauge invariant. For the spatial metric, which is still gauge invariant and the scalar field. We then have to fix a gauge to get rid of the gauge symmetry, the diffeomorphism invariance that was there in the original action. So we do that by expanding around the inflationary background solution. And what's usually done is to choose this co-moving gauge, where we choose the slices to correspond to the slices of constant value for the scalar field. So there's no scalar field fluctuation in this gauge, and everything lives in the spatial metric. The zeta is the conformal factor of the metric, and the gamma, the transverse traceless, the determinant one part of the metric. And the degrees of freedom are now, only the physical degrees of freedom are left, carried by this zeta and gamma. And then the lapse and the shift, we had to solve these. We do this order by order in the fields. And the solution is non-local, so the action we get will be non-local in space, but still local in time. We plug the solution back into the action, and we generate this action order by order in the fields. So here's the scalar action, second order action, the third order action, and so on. The tensor mode, same thing, and then the mixed actions mixing the two. So the power spectrum at tree level will come from just the quadratic action. The higher point functions will come from the higher interacting parts of the action. So we're interested in this consistency relation. So this was noticed first by Maldacena back in 2002. You noticed if you take the three-point function and you look at this squeezed limit where one of the momenta becomes much smaller than the other two, in the limit it can be related to the derivative with respect to scale of the two-point function. So physically, all this means is that if you look at a three-point function and you take one of the momenta to be very small, so you have two short modes now living on top of a very long mode, and you can treat that very long mode looks basically like a constant background, which you can then reabsorb by making a by doing a scale transformation. So this consistency relation, it holds in all single field models under some very mild assumptions. The assumptions are that there has to be a constant growing mode, so the background has to be an attractor, and that we are starting with the standard the Bunch-Davies vacuum. So this relation's powerful because if it seemed to be violated, if you measure a large three-point function in this limit, it would automatically rule out all standard single field models. Okay, so this relation has been extended in many ways. So first to higher point functions. If I have an n plus 1 point function in this soft limit, it's related to the derivatives with respect to scale of an n point function. There's also these so-called special conformal consistency relations or linear gradient relations, where there's now a derivative with respect to q here, so in the soft limit. So now it's telling you something about the order q behavior in the soft limit. And it's related to something which has two derivatives with respect to scale of an n minus 1 point function. So these relations are very reminiscent of soft pion theorems in QCD. In chiral perturbation theory, when you talk about scattering of pions, in the limit where some of the pions have momenta which are very small compared to the other, you get these kind of Ward identities that look exactly like this. And in the case of QCD, these are the result of nonlinearly realized symmetry, spontaneous symmetry breaking. So we want to make a same kind of interpretation in this case. We want to interpret these as due to a Ward identity of some spontaneously broken symmetries. So our goal is going to be to write down the most general such consistency relation. And the relation we're going to find is going to have this schematic form. There's going to be an infinite number of them, all labeled by n, and the nth one constrains the behavior of the correlation function in the, at order q to the n in the soft limit. So first of all, I should say these higher order relations involving like multi-point functions and subleading behavior of q to the n, it's likely not observable anytime soon. But nevertheless, I want to subscribe to this philosophy of Weinberg when he was computing loops of inflationary correlation functions. These are also likely not observable, but it's still important to understand what your theories entail and the structures of your theories, even if it's not directly observable. Just as field theorists in the 40s and 50s, they took pains to understand QED and field theory to all orders, because you learn something by doing this. Okay, so we want to identify what could this symmetry be? What could the spontaneously broken symmetry be that leads to these things as Ward identities? So the starting point, the starting action was just GR. The only symmetry of GR is diffeomorphism invariance. So these symmetries have to be a subset of that. So to get a start, let's ignore the tensor modes for a second and just imagine that all we have is this zeta. This is not a consistent thing to do, but it'll show us the right direction. So we start with this co-moving gauge with only the zeta there. Suppose we can think up a transformation of zeta which makes this spatial metric transform as a diffeomorphism, as a spatial diffeomorphism. If we can find such a transformation, we can then allow the lapse and shift to transform as they would under a spatial diffeomorphism, and then we will have found a symmetry of the action if we can do this. So here it's easy to identify what those symmetries are, because this is nothing but a conformal metric, a conformal spatial metric. So the symmetries are nothing but the conformal transformations of three-dimensional space, of the spatial slices. So any conformal killing vector, which is a solution to the conformal killing equation on R3, is going to be such a transformation. And then zeta will have to shift to absorb that transformation. So zeta is acting like a dilaton for the conformal transformations on space. So what are those conformal symmetries? Well, you have the translations and the rotations. These we already know, just the the usual translations and rotations of FRW. These are linearly realized on zeta. These we don't care about so much. But the interesting ones are the non-linearly realized ones, where zeta shifts. There's the dilations, where zeta shifts by a constant. And there's the special conformal transformations, where zeta shifts by a linear gradient. And these, along with the translations and rotations, they close to form the De Sitter algebra SO41. So here, the background was not assumed to be De Sitter. There's no slow roll assumption. This is just a generic FRW. But we still have this now spontaneous symmetry breaking pattern of SO41 down to the isometries of flat space. Okay, so now let's bring back in the tensors. Let's try to extend this symmetry order by order in the tensor fields to see what the full symmetry of could be. So again, we're gonna go to this co-moving gauge choice, and we're gonna ask, is there any transformation now of zeta and gamma, which, when acted on this spatial metric in co-moving gauge, looks like a spatial diffeomorphism. If we're successful, then we've found a global symmetry of the gauge fixed action. So what we're doing is looking for residual diffeomorphisms that preserve the co-moving gauge choice. So it's said that co-moving gauge choice completely fixes the gauge, and that's true for gauge transformations that fall off at infinity, but it's not true for gauge transformations that don't fall off at infinity. So what we're going to be finding are residual gauge symmetries of co-moving gauge that don't fall off at infinity. Maybe. I'll say more here. Okay, so we're going to look for these solutions in order by order in powers of the tensor. So we expand the change in gamma, the change in zeta, and the diff parameter that we're looking for all in powers of gamma. And at each order, we have to impose that this equation is satisfied and that gamma remain transverse and traceless, so that we remain in this co-moving gauge. So at zeroth order, here's what the equation looks like, expanded to zeroth order. So now we do just some manipulations. We take the trace. That allows us to solve for the zeta transformation. Plug back. It allows us to solve for the gamma. Take a divergence. It allows us to solve for the gauge parameter. First of all, it's possible to show that there's no solutions which vanish at infinity. That's the statement that co-moving gauge fixes all those types of gauge transformation. Also, there can be no dependence on zeta if we demand that zeta falls off at infinity. So now we extend this to first order in the tensors. Same thing. We expand it to first order. We take traces and divergences and plug back, and we can solve all of these things, the transformations and the gauge parameter. We can solve the first order bits all in terms of the zeroth order bits. And now the solution looks spatially non-local, but we can find it. And you can go order by order here, and there's no obstruction to continuing this procedure to all orders in the tensors. So the nth order transformation, and the full transformation, is determined in terms of the zeroth order parameter. So all you have to find is some vector that satisfies this equation here, and then you can continue it to all orders in the tensor, and you can find, and that will be a symmetry of the action in co-moving gauge. So this equation here is nothing but the divergence of the conformal Killing equation on R3. So what are the solutions? Since it's the divergence of the conformal Killing equation, any conformal Killing vector is a solution for one. So we still have the dilations and the special conformal transformations, but now we have a prescription on how to extend them to all orders in the tensors. There will also be solutions which are not conformal Killing vectors. We'll call these things tensor symmetries, since they rely crucially on the presence of the tensors. Just a curiosity, the dilation symmetry happens to be exact. It doesn't receive any corrections in the tensor. Okay, so let's look at what the general solution is. Let's take this zeta, the xi, the gauge parameter, expand it order by order in powers of x, the coordinate, with some coefficients m. So one of these m's for each n, just a Taylor series. Plug it into our equation. That gives you some relation among the coefficients for n. And then we have to ensure that the transversality of the gamma is preserved, and that gives us another equation that m, this combination of m's has to be transverse in an appropriate way. So our picture is that we have an infinite set of symmetries indexed by n, and we'll find that the nth such symmetry constrains, when we write the word identity for it, constrains the correlation function at order q to n in the soft limit. Okay, so we want to go from these symmetries now to the consistency relation. So I'm going to show you just schematically how the derivation goes. So don't try too hard to follow the details. If you really want to see the details, you'll have to look at the paper. But the starting point is just the quantum mechanical statement that the conserved charge associated with our transformation generates the transformation as an operator statement. So this is our starting point, left-hand side, right-hand side. Q here is just going to be the standard another charge corresponding to our symmetry. O here is going to be our equal time product of zetas and gammas. And then omega here is going to be the standard in vacuum, the bunch Davies vacuum, which is related to the free vacuum by some molar wave operator of the type you are familiar with from quantum mechanics scattering. So let's start with the right-hand side, which was just the vacuum expectation value of the symmetry transformation itself. So we plug in, we were able to solve the symmetry transformation. We plug it in. Here's the operator that we have, just some generic product of zetas and gammas at equal time. Here's what the transformation expectation value of the transformation looks like in momentum space with all the gory indices. So now onto the left-hand side, we want to first use this intertwining relation that says that the full charge is related to the Q charge by moving through this molar wave operator. And this allows us to work with just the free charge as acting on the free vacuum. So this is the kind of quantity we'll need to compute. And the free charge is just the symmetry of the free theory. So it's just the nonlinear part of the symmetry transformation, which schematically just goes like x to the n. So when we write the charge, the another charge is going to go like x to the n times the canonical momentum of the fields. So in Fourier space, this is going to look like a derivative with respect to q to the n in the q equals 0 limit. That's where the q equals 0 soft limit is going to come from. Now we insert this set of free field eigenstates, a complete set. So that's going to turn now this canonical momentum of the field. We can now write that as a derivative of the wave functional of the field. Now we're going to use the assumption that the wave functional is just the standard bunch Davies vacuum, which is a Gaussian. So we write the wave functional as a Gaussian. And the weight of the Gaussian is nothing but the power spectrum. So this derivative now, this is what's going to bring down the power spectrum on the left-hand side of the word identity. And then we're going to have to use the assumption that zeta and gamma have constant growing modes or are conserved outside the horizon to turn these back into full fields. And then we'll arrive at our left-hand side that we want. So here's the full consistency relation that we arrive at. This is written here just to first order in the tensors, but you in principle can go as far as you want. So here it is in schematic form again. So on the left-hand side, again, we have this nth derivative with respect to q. So we're constraining the order q to the n behavior in the soft limit. And on the right-hand side, we have n derivatives with respect to scale. And again, this holds in any spatially flat FRW background. We made no assumption about slow roll. And it holds to all loops. This was just manipulations that didn't rely on any sort of perturbation theory. So the first few cases, the n equals 0 case is the simplest. So here the transformation is just some two-index tensor m with one power of x. So we can break this m up into a symmetric trace-free part, an anti-symmetric part, and a trace. Yeah? Yeah, oh yeah, that's right, yeah. We do have to assume that, because we have to assume that there's a constant growing mode. So you don't want, yeah, exactly. Okay, so this The anisymmetric part is just a spatial rotation. We're not interested in that. The trace part is going to be our dilation symmetry. The symmetric traceless part is going to give us two tensor symmetries, which are like anisotropic rescalings. And we plug this into our word identity, and these reproduce the original consistency relations of Maldacena and the extensions. The next is the n equals 1 case, where we have a 3-index m now, and similarly we can break it up into its various pieces. And we find that among them are the three special conformal symmetries, and also four new tensor symmetries, where only gamma transforms nonlinearly. And we plug this into our word identity, and we now recover the special conformal consistency relations of these people here, which constrain the order q to the 1 behavior of the soft limit. So at n equal 2, this is the first case where we get a genuinely new consistency relation. When our paper came out, it was genuinely new, and it's since been studied in this paper here. So here, we find that for n greater than or equal to 2, we always get six new symmetries. Here's an example of one of the consistency relations for one of the tensor symmetries, where we have a gamma here. Here's how it looks on the three-point function. So we verified this explicitly for Maldacena's three-point function that he calculated back in 2002. You can plug it in, and you can explicitly verify that this relation is satisfied. Okay, so further directions that could be pursued along these lines. So one is multiple soft limits. We didn't do anything about multiple soft limits. So in the case of pions in QCD, if you look at multiple soft limits, there's an ambiguity in how you take the limit. You can take one q to 0 before the other, or do it in the opposite direction, and those don't commute. And the amount by which they don't commute encodes the non-trivial commutation relations of the spontaneously broken symmetries. So if you did this here and had some identities for these double soft limits, you'd expect to recover the non-trivial commutation relations of the broken symmetries. Another thing is collapsed limits, where some linear combination of the momenta is going to 0. It would be interesting to ask what the most general such consistency relation for these are. And finally, whether it's possible to write a consistency relation for a modified initial state to move away from the Bunch-Davies assumption. Okay, so in conclusion, we have this, what we think is the most general consistency relation that involves one soft limit in standard single field cosmology. And this, again, is the schematic form that it takes. Okay, so I think I'll stop there. But before I do, on behalf of all the speakers, I'd like to thank the organizers for all their work in putting together such a nice conference.
So do we have any question for Kurt?
So I think you assumed that the interactions are very simple, no higher derivative interactions, but I'm guessing that you can carry on the same machinery for higher derivative theories. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. We didn't assume anything about the number of derivatives in the interactions.
And what if you have something like Gauss inflation, with actually the wave function does change from the very beginning? Would you be able in that case to?
Yeah, as long as it satisfies these two assumptions that we make of a constant growing mode, single field only, and standard adiabatic vacuum, then.
So it might be harder, but it's doable.
Yeah.
Well, I have a somewhat stupid question, I guess. Mm-hmm. So in the earlier slide, you say that it seems to suggest that having an attractor solution is equivalent to having a constant as in a growing mode or something.
Yeah.
Is that exactly equivalent for some reason?
I guess it depends what you mean by attractor. But just heuristically, if you don't have an attractor, you're going to have a mode that grows rather than goes to a constant.
So you talked about trying to see what would happen if you weren't in Bunch Davies. Yeah. So breaking one of your assumptions, have you thought about breaking the others? Like, what if you, you know, yeah. What would happen in multi-field? What would happen in...
Yeah, good. Yeah. So as far as going away from Bunch Davies, the sticking point there is when we were doing those manipulations, the Bunch Davies vacuum has this nice Gaussian, which we can differentiate and do stuff with, whereas some more general state wouldn't necessarily have a form that's manipulable into a final answer. As far as multi-fields, generalizing the symmetries would be tricky. I'm not quite sure how to do that. It's sort of crucial that we were able to go into this co-moving gauge where we set one of the fields to that there's no fluctuation associated with the field, whereas if you have isocurvature modes, you can't do that.
Just to respond to your comment about multi-field,
yeah.
The symmetries here are diffeomorphisms. So if you add extra fields, you already know what they do on all additional fields you could add. So I could just set the inflaton BEV to, I could pick co-moving gauge, and then I would just, again, I just have a bunch of spectators.
Yeah.
I think the issue is the identification of the charge acting on the vacuum with the observed zeta. I think you will get the same consistency relations. It just doesn't translate to the observable.
Good. Point. Yeah. Good. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. The diffeomorphisms are just going to be the standard action on a scalar, but the actual zeta is not just cleanly identifiable. Yeah. Thanks.
No other questions. Let's thank Kurt again.